What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your more pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock, and today we're going to talk about the Baltimore Orioles. So this is not the best pitching staff. We've known this for a while with this crew, and the first one we got to talk about is Kyle Bradish. Kyle Bradish is coming back from his Tommy John season, where he had just about 32 innings last season on the .253 ERA, the 103 whip, because he was really great in those six starts. And he looked like the Kyle Bradish of old. He had the slider that was looking great, the curveball that was looking great, and featuring more of that sinker and not allowing this four-seamer to be in the zone too much, which is what we want, because it's an ultra-cut four-seamer that gets hit really hard by righties. I would love for Kyle Bradish to throw that inside to lefties. He doesn't have that skill yet. It's fine. Because Kyle Bradish next season is going to throw every 5 days. And I've been hearing some discussion about, oh, there's injury risk, there's workload concerns. Throw that out the window. I have a rule, and I've yet to see it broken, which is if a pitcher has gone over 150 innings in the past, they are expected to hit that again when they return for a full year. So Kyle Bradish had over 160 innings, and the next year he had Tommy John, and then he missed most of that year, and then 2025, etc. And let's be honest, the Orioles are not going to slow play Kyle Bradish. Sure, they might go 4 innings or 5 innings, or really 75 pitches here and there for starts, but they won't shut him down, and they're not going to have this like 4-inning cap for ages or whatever. They might maybe skip a start at one point, fine. But you're going to get regular Kyle Bradish for the Orioles. In no time at all, you'll see him going 90-plus pitches routinely, if not right out of the gate. And what you're going to get is one of the best sliders in baseball, a phenomenal curve underneath it, a wonderful situation pitching for the Orioles, which you're going to hear me say a lot because it's a good pitcher's park. And also, that offense should be much better. I mean, they just signed Pete Alonso. Who knows what else is going to go on there? But yes, that was a down year for that offense last season. So I really like Kyle Bradish. I see them as a reliable, like right there on the ace is going to ace level, because he had a 37% K rate last year. No, that was a small sample. But he is that 25 to 30% K rate guy with that slider. It should be a productive whip, should be a productive ERA, should be lots of volume with those wins, should be low walk rate. Like this is a very good starter. It's not going to be part of that upper tier of Crochet and Scooble and Skeens. And he's not quite there with, say, like the Brian Wu or the Yamamoto on a per-game basis or so. But Kyle Bradish is actually at the back end of the reliable starters that I'm actually okay having as my SP1 in the 6th, 7th round of drafts. I know that sounds ridiculous. How could you do that? Because what I do is I go pitchers from rounds 6 or 7 for 4 straight rounds. And you'll be surprised at how good your staff will be instead of favoring that anchor, quote-unquote, who is an injury risk. It's higher injury risk for pitchers than hitters, and the hitters are just too good in the first 4 or 5 rounds. We'll see where everything shapes up by March, but in my early mock drafts is just how it looked. And I think Kyle Bradish is one of those guys I will be circling this year. Shane Baz is now with Baltimore, and I love it and hate it. I hate it because I was so excited for Shane Baz to go pitch in the Trop again. The Trop is phenomenal for a guy like Baz, who had 16 inches of vert last year and would push that four-seamer into 18 inches of vert, where we saw 98 in his final game this season, albeit in 49 pitches. It was just a 4-inning start. But the velocity is still there for Shane Baz. The intent to go upstairs is still there. And George Steinbrenner Field messed with him. It also destroyed his slider, which he then changed into a cutter midway through the year. And I like that cutter more for Baz. Even like the rare times he would throw the slider, it would allow a home run in like 3 or 4 thrown. It was driving me up the wall. But that cutter is better. And the curveball is still the anchor of Shane Baz's arsenal, as it has been since the end of 2024. And now he's with the Orioles. And the Orioles, I think, is a wonderful situation again. I think they're going to do the right things with Shane Baz. And what's kind of funny is the Orioles used to be this team that would not encourage the cutter. I think they are going to, especially against lefties, for Shane Baz. So get excited about this. I think he is going to go regularly. He showed last year that he can have that workload. And I think the Orioles are going to lean on him heavily. It's going to be a good opportunity for wins, good run support, good morale for him. I like this for Shane Baz. I am not going to overdraft him. I do recognize that the control and command was off last year. And while I want to say George Steinbrenner Field does that, maybe there is more to say about it. Also, the four-seamer did not display itself as an elite pitch, and making the curveball do most of the work. And I would love to see an elite four-seamer and an elite curve, and then having the cutter as a solid number three. We're not quite there. So there is a little hesitation of those blow-up games, of those high whip moments, more hits allowed than I would want. So that means I'm not really considering Baz as a guy that I pick up and I'm absolutely holding on to. However, he is a really good SP5-6 in that realm. And it's really tough for me to decide between Shane Baz and maybe Zach Eflin or Trevor Rogers. And I'll start with Trevor Rogers because I think I'm going to favor him more than Baz. I think everyone will, but the gap isn't as high as you might think. Because Trevor Rogers went 109 innings last year, coming back from injury, and 1.81 ERA with a 0.9 whip. Now, keep in mind, Trevor Rogers also had a start at the beginning of the year, then disappeared for a moment, then came back. I believe he was in the minors. He was called up and then back down, then came back up and was just so good. 24% K rate and a 7% walk rate in that time. And I went deep into this one. I mean, yes, last year was the year of the swatch, right? The southpaw with a tight changeup, and Trevor Rogers obviously was that. The changeup was the bread and butter, the pitch of last season. But the four-seamer is the real, real weird one. And on the shallow level, we see all these ridiculous, obvious regression stats that everyone's going to be quoting. 5.7 hit per nine, fueled by a 2.28 BABIP and a 9% home run to fly ball. And keep in mind, our home run to fly ball does not even include any pop-ups. It's not like we just all bunch them together. So that's even lower than you'd expect. Also an 84% left on base rate. But of course, you're going to see that when you have a 1.81 ERA. And Trevor Rogers in his slider, in his changeup, in his sweeper, sinker, all of those looked normal. Four-seamer actually looked normal too. Velocity-wise, 92 to 93. It's kind of what it was before. And its shape and its movement, all of that stuff, the same. But the location was different. He was throwing 50%+ high location with sub-20% low location. While in the past, we've seen 30% low location, like 35% high location from Trevor Rogers. And take that as you will, because obviously this was a positive change. It made it so that he had amazing pitch separation between four-seamer and changeup. And I get it. It makes sense. He also threw more strikes with that four-seamer because it just wasn't getting hit. I mean, the marks on this against right-handers was just stupid. Like a 140 batting average allowed on it. Absurd put-away rate. I mean, all of these things that just go, what? This is not sustainable. However, it should still be good, right? And I wonder where he's actually going to end up in drafts. Because obviously no one's going to be drafting him expecting a 1.81 ERA and a 0.9 whip. It's just the question is when that regression happens, which might even be like a hit and a half. It should be like a 7 to an 8 hit per 9 for Trevor Rogers. Probably like a 7 and change. And, you know, how does that affect everything as he gets into more trouble, right? I still think that Trevor Rogers is going to be someone that you do not drop. I think he's still going to be effective. I mean, this is also assuming that he's retaining the same skills. I also want to give the Orioles in 2026 more credit than the previous teams he's worked with. So it's been years removed while also working with the Marlins in 2021 and 2022. And I think we can all agree the Marlins are even better now than they were in 2026, let alone the Orioles also. So that means we might see a cutter show up against right-handers. We might see quicker adjustments and tweaks in season for when it's not going right. So I do like Trevor Rogers. However, I can't draft him over more trusted arms that are going inside like the top 35 or so. So I have Trevor Rogers around 40, 45, and that might be where everybody lands. And I would rather have that over Baz because I do trust that. I mean, Trevor Rogers just had such a good season that it's hard to deny the fact that he's capable, right? But I wouldn't go crazy for him. I wouldn't really jump over everything to get to him. All right, there's also Zach Eflin, who signed a one-year deal with the Orioles. And I'm going to tell you about him and Cade Povich, Dean Kramer, Tyler Wells, and some prospects to consider after this break. Zach Eflin, to me, is going to be a really good value because I don't think that he's going to be going in the top 50 starting pitchers. He might not even go in the top 60. And if that's the case, Zach Eflin is a guy I'm circling at the end of my 12-teamer drafts. Why? Because he had a season of injuries with his back. And he's actually mentioned to us that he's been laboring with his back for a few years now. It normally happened once or so, get over it, and he'd be fine. This was the year they had it twice. So he got surgery in November. And there is some risk in this because he might not have a normal spring training, which might mean he misses a start at the beginning of the year. And generally, I'm just not in on that. However, Zach Eflin healthy should be a stable number four for your team. It just makes too much sense for me. This is a great situation in Baltimore. He's going to be going 90 plus pitches constantly because it's a one-year deal and he wants to prove himself. He took a contract to prove himself this year. And healthy means that the arsenal is on full display. You have four-seamers saved for four to strikeout batters upstairs. Sinkers going back door to righties and inside to righties as well. You have it mixed in there with a changeup to lefties, but maybe the cutter really takes over against lefties. You have the sweeper now and the curveball. He is a prototypical Holly, right? That is not going to have a 19% strikeout rate, but like a 22-23% strikeout rate with quality ratios. This is the kind of guy I love getting this year. And the fact that he's not going inside the top 200 starting pitchers is just fantastic. Yes, there is that injury ding, which is likely why he's not being drafted there at the moment. That said, the second he shows up in spring training, we get a sense of when he will be starting and if it's normal or not. I think that I will be jumping over hurdles to go get Zach Eflin. You have Dean Kramer, who I just want to tell you don't go for. He's actually the new great undulator after Jose Berríos has just really fallen off a cliff. And that's because Dean Kramer has had an ERA between 410 and 420 for three straight seasons. Now, that's a product of the starts from Kramer being very good or very bad, just like Jose Berríos. He has a splitter that can be very good on a given night, but is not reliable because it's a splitter. You have a four-seamer that can excel upstairs with 17 inches of vert. You have a cutter that can be good down away to right-handers and a slew of other little things here and there. But you just don't know what you're going to get. And even when he looks like he's in rhythm, he can then have a disaster. So I call him Dean Werewolf. That is, a werewolf is someone who shows up once a month and is either beastly or a beast, right? It's just not the kind of thing I want to go for in my drafts. I just will never feel comfortable. He is a hipster, and that is just not what you want. Cade Povich is someone I'm going to be focused on mid-season. I think that once he does get an opportunity to get his feet dug into the rotation and consistently starting every 5 days, I think Cade Povich can really, really be a phenomenal Holly. Now, I don't think he'll be that right away. I think this is really more of a 2027 thing. But we might see it midseason, where he started to embrace the cutter again in the end of 2025. He has a changeup, he has a four-seamer, he has a curveball. He is made to be a swatch with good intention on everything, but the command isn't quite there yet. So again, it's a good situation in Baltimore, and if Cade Povich does get a firm lock in the rotation, that good security, I think we're going to see that development and him turn into that lovely 15-team ad, if not a 12-teamer by the end. Tyler Wells is someone they might be turning to as Wells, who had four starts of success, 2.91 ERA and a .88 WHIP last year. As you know, he is the perfect streamer for poor offenses. Right, he locates his stuff well. It moves just a little bit more than expected. That is a four-seamer at 91. Has a little bit of giddy up upstairs. He has this cutter that does well and a changeup to lefties. It's the slider that does well to right-handers. It's just, you know, he doesn't throw hard enough, but he's a good command guy, and the Orioles will let him go 5-6 innings. Right, so if he does get regular starts, monitor the schedule. That's all it is for Tyler Wells, though. Now, there are other guys like Albert Suarez who might get a start here and there. So he did start 24 in 2024. but I don't think he has enough. It's like 94 with an intent to go upstairs, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. There's a changeup for lefties, a cutter for righties, a curveball he did trust more last season that I don't really think is that great. It's just none of it is worth drafting, and I don't really think I'd want to even stream him in season unless it's a phenomenal matchup and he's been in rhythm. Dietrich Enns had a moment at the beginning of the year. He had a surprise start in June that was awesome. And then he got bamboozled by the Nationals, even when he had these like sinkers that were up and in and really good. And he looks like a swatch on paper, but it never really came together as a starter, and they moved him into relief and he was okay. The four-seamer is surprisingly good. He had a 13% swing strike rate to right-handers, but 23% swing strike rate with 40% usage to lefties, which is shocking. The cutter is really bad to lefties, though, and the changeup had a 4% put-away rate. I don't think the four-seamer is going to be as good from Enns this next year, and I don't think that this is going to be that wonderful surprise thing that we saw. Brandon Young had that wonderful moment in Houston, you might remember, where he was so close to a perfect game, four outs to go in Houston, so it was two outs in the eighth, and then he threw it away, and it just didn't come together, and then he started again versus Houston in Baltimore the next time out, and it was 700 runs in 5.1 innings. And that was it, and then he had a hamstring strain. His arsenal doesn't seem amazing, but there is something fun with a 94-mile-per-hour fastball that has 17 inches of vert, and a splitter that surprisingly had a 70% strike rate to left-handers last season. The curve and the slider are pretty mediocre, though, and I don't see this as a guy that I'm circling, really. I just told you that it's four-seamer splitter as the main attributes, and the four-seamer is not hard. It just has some vert, and it means that he has to have fantastic command, and he needs to have consistent command of the splitter. It's just not really the kind of guy I want to go for. He's also at 28. He's not young enough, no pun intended, to be a guy that we can really expect to have massive gains between the offseason, between off seasons and seasons, between seasons in the offseason. Okay. Chase McDermott. Oh man, we've seen him two separate seasons, once in 2024, and then he had a lat strain. And then we had a four relief appearances this past year, and they were bad. They were really, really bad. Now, I like his mechanics. He looks really cool coming out with it. He has 17 and 18 inches of vert with that four-seamer, the slight attack angle that's flat at 93-94, but he just cannot command. And that's with all of the stuff, the sweepers, the sliders, the cutters, the curves, even a splitter. Like, he just cannot locate these things. But it's possible that McDermott, all right, those were four games of jitters probably in 2025, getting a second chance at the bigs and just didn't do it. It's possible that he makes that tweak in the offseason. To be fair, he also struggled in the minors with walk rates. So it's not like he only struggled in the majors. I hope he can get that feel back. And if he does, all of a sudden the walks go away, I would be paying attention to Chase McDermott. Other prospect arms to consider, this Trey Gibson, who's really weird. He has a slider and a cutter that might be backwards on their labels. That is, the slider is harder with a little bit more horizontal, while the cutter is slower, but with like gyro, but minus 4 inches is extra depth. It's very strange. His four-seamer is dead zone. It's terrible. And it's like the worst, meatiest four-seamer. So hopefully the sinker is, I don't know, reign supreme. It's weird because you have the sinker that can locate inside of right-handers, but then there's no plan for lefties. And there is a really good sweeper in here and a big two-plane curve. It's just, I need to see better fastballs and what his plan is for lefties for me to get interested in him. He's in AAA at 23. You have Levi Wells, who is so close. He has a 95-96 mile per hour four-seamer that has two planes of movement. That is 16 to 17 inches of vert and like 12 to 13 inches of horizontal, which is really cool. And then a curve and a cutter as his two favorite secondaries, plus a sinker that jams right-handers. And a slider that is like 12 inches or 10 to 12 inches of horizontal, so it's trying to act like a sweeper. He just doesn't locate well enough. Now, when he locates, it's great. And he's only 24. Maybe Levi Wells can actually start spotting these pitches. If he does, I really think this is a really fun arsenal. And with that innate velocity of 95-96, I think there's some cool things. But yeah, we're not there yet. Nestor Herman. It was really cool watching his video that I have linked inside the article for the Orioles. But the data from his two AAA games was so bad. He throws a 93-mile-per-hour four-seam that's so over the top that makes his 19 inches of vert not actually that good because it's not very surprising with that arm angle. But he is so much of that over-the-top classic guy. He has a big curveball underneath, and he has a slider and the change as well going through just from the 12-6 curve, right? You have the change going a little bit more arm side, the slider going more glove side. I'm excited to see more in AAA to see if he actually can locate and actually, you know, execute with all of these things. Hopefully there's a little bit of extra velocity too instead of being at 93. So we'll see with Herman, but as of right now, I'm not interested. And last one is Luis de Leon. He's a slinging southpaw with low extension, very low extension, and control problems. But man, when he's cooking, oh, he's getting grounders with his sinker and whiffs with his breaker and his changeup, and he is a swatch without the controls. 27 walks and 55 frames across single A, A plus ball, and double A. So definitely consider De Leon if he's able to actually get control as a swatch, right? But he has some whiff ability in there too. But until then, we are not interested. All right, that is it. So my name is Nick Pollock, and may your bat be low and your strikeouts high.